The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As the death toll in Gaza surpassed 43,000 people since Israel's invasion of the region last October, what next for the war? Well, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has fired his and replaced his defense minister. Qatar has paused its role as mediator, and Donald Trump is returning to the Oval Office. Now, to discuss all of this, we're joined by Gershon Baskin, Middle East Director for the International Communities Organization, which is a UK-based NGO, and he himself a former Israeli hostage negotiator. Gershon Baskin, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, just talking about your own role, prior to October the 7th, you had a number of back channels open with the Palestinians.
Yes, I've been negotiating with Hamas for the last 18 years, on and off, officially, unofficially, all in an effort to bring us to a better situation than we've been in. And this is because of the decision of Prime Minister Netanyahu taken back in 2009 to keep Hamas in place in Gaza and an illegitimate Palestinian authority in Ramallah so as not to negotiate a two-state solution with the Palestinian people.
So that you believe, was his logic. If you keep those two non-representative governments in power, that there can be no two-state solution because there was no negotiation possible.
That's right. Netanyahu kept telling the world that we want to have peace with our neighbors, but we have no one to negotiate with. And that's been a strategically created reality, I must say, with the cooperation of some of the Palestinians involved, both Hamas and from the Palestinian Authority itself. But that situation cannot continue. This war that we've been facing for more than a year now, with so many tens of thousands of people killed in Gaza and 2 million people homeless, and Israeli society in constant trauma because of the atrocities committed by Hamas last October, and soldiers coming home dead every day. This simply is not something that we can continue, nor can the international community allow it to continue.
Now, there was talk of a rapprochement between Hamas and the authority in the West Bank. Do you think in any way that provoked the Hamas outrage on October 7th?
No. Hamas and Fatah, the leading party in the Palestinian Authority, have negotiated and signed 7 agreements between them over the years, including one that was signed in Mecca, where the participants swore on the Quran that they would adhere to it, but they haven't. Fatah and Hamas cannot negotiate the future of Gaza or the future of the Palestinian Authority. There needs to be new Palestinian leadership, certainly taking over in Gaza, because if Hamas stays in charge of Gaza, there's no chance of any reconstruction taking place or any kind of calm. The war won't end as long as Hamas is in control of Gaza. This is a reality that the Hamas leadership knows, but they can't negotiate a deal with Fatah because there's so much animosity between the two parties.
Now, you had your back channels open to Hamas for many, many years, as you said. Did you have any intimations that something like October the 7th was planned or could ever happen?
No, I never heard anything about it, never thought about it. In retrospect, when I looked at my exchanges with some of the Hamas people I was talking to, there was a noted change in tone, but at real time, I didn't understand what was about to happen. I don't think anyone did.
And your understanding of what happened then with Netanyahu's government and the response in Gaza, which, as you know, the international community, by and large, with the exception perhaps of the United States, and even there, Biden has been a bit circumspect, that response from Israel was disproportionate to the outrage of October 7th.
Well, I think initially after October 7th, there was universal support for Israel to respond, for Israel to do an attack against the Hamas leadership and Hamas military threat to Israel. But that should have ended after a few short weeks of warfare, of Israeli response, and then it should have moved into a diplomatic political channel to find solutions to the conflict. But that has not happened. This is nothing but a disproportionate response in Gaza, as we've seen the horrific humanitarian situation in Gaza today. And no one seems able to stop it. Israel has demands that the hostages that are being held, still 101 hostages are being held by Hamas, have to be released. We have no idea how many of them are alive. Probably most of them are no longer alive and Israel wants the dead hostages to be turned as well. There has to be an end to the war. Israel has to withdraw from Gaza, and Israel will also have to release Palestinian prisoners in exchange for this whole deal. But Hamas is going to have to own up by understanding that they cannot continue to control Gaza. There needs to be a civilian, professional, technocratic government in place in Gaza for a number of years, with hopefully an Arab-led peacekeeping force sent to Gaza as well, and billions of dollars for reconstruction, which Israel should participate in. But this is a very difficult thing to maneuver right now, particularly when the whole world is waiting to see what happens after January 20th and Donald Trump takes back the White House.
Now, can you parse for us the reasoning behind Netanyahu's dismissal of his defense minister, Yoav Gallant, because he said he no longer had any confidence in him? But what was really going on there?
Well, what was really going on is that there is a high court order in Israel to write a draft law which will no longer exempt the ultra-Orthodox youth from serving in the army. There are tens of thousands of ultra-Orthodox Jewish youth who are exempt from military service. And in a reality where we've had a war on several fronts going on for more than a year, and many of our reserve soldiers who are our grown people are serving more than 200 days a year with hundreds of soldiers dead and tens of thousands wounded, the Israeli army needs more soldiers and can no longer tolerate having the exemption for tens of thousands of ultra-Orthodox youth. Now, Netanyahu doesn't want this law to pass or doesn't want them drafted because that will break up his coalition, which is dependent upon the ultra-Orthodox political parties. And that's what it was about, because the defense minister said that he would not pass a law that exempts these ultra-Orthodox youth from military service anymore. So Netanyahu pushed him out of the way. He has a new defense minister who will be a puppet for Netanyahu, will do whatever Netanyahu wants, and they will pass this law that won't hold up in the Supreme Court of Israel, but it will prolong the life of Netanyahu's government.
I want to play you a very short clip, 30 seconds or thereabouts. This, on Yoav Gallant's last day as defense minister, he told family members of hostages that Israel had achieved all it could achieve in Gaza, and he put the blame for continued war squarely on Netanyahu's shoulders. And at that meeting was a man called Gil Dickman, whose cousin Karam Al-Gat was taken hostage on October the 7th, and he had spoken with NPR. Have a listen.
It was very clear from him that the reason why we didn't take this deal was not military. It wasn't diplomatic. I think it was a political reason. That meant that my cousin, who was alive at the beginning of July, stayed in captivity and was murdered 6 weeks later. It feels like we've been through 13 months of gaslighting, in which Netanyahu is telling us, don't blame me for the fact that the hostages aren't here. It's mind-boggling for me to think that this is what the Prime Minister of Israel is doing.
So the blood of hostages on Netanyahu's hands because he has not seized opportunities for a ceasefire and freeing hostages.
That's 100% true. I mean, look, part of the reason there's no agreement is also on the shoulders of Hamas. But Netanyahu could have reached agreements a long time ago. The war could have ended. There could have been an Israeli withdrawal, and the hostages could have been released. And it's very clear it's not only Gallant, the outgoing defense minister, who said it. It was the other members of the war cabinet, like Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot, who also claimed when they left the government that Netanyahu, for political reasons, was prolonging the war. And that's to extend the lifeline of his government and his own political lifeline.
Now, two other developments. Qatar saying we're pausing our role as mediator because we need both sides to get serious about an ambition for a ceasefire. What do you say to that move by Qatar?
Well, I think it's about 8 months late. They should have done this a long time ago because they knew that there were obstacles in reaching an agreement, and they should have notified both parties, Israel and Hamas, that they were not going to continue their efforts to mediate when there was no mandate to their negotiators to reach an agreement. That's the reality until today. The Egyptians should do the same, should notify Israel that there's no point in negotiating if there's no mandate for your negotiators to reach an agreement. I know from my experience in negotiating these deals back in 2011, the Mossad officer who was in charge of the negotiation received from the Prime Minister, Netanyahu at the time as well, a very clear mandate. Netanyahu said regarding the Israeli soldier Gilad Shalit, bring him home. Netanyahu has not told his negotiators now in 13 months, bring them home. They do not have a mandate to reach an agreement. And these negotiations will go on for as long as Netanyahu wants to continue the war.
Now, the presumption when Donald Trump takes office on the 20th of January is that he will be four square behind Netanyahu. But he also is someone who looks for wins. And one of the wins he'll be looking for will be the end of the conflict in the Middle East. I mean, is he likely to metaphorically put a gun to Netanyahu's head and say, stop this, I need this to stop?
Look, the only thing that's predictable about Trump is his unpredictability. I think it's impossible for anyone to know what he's going to do when he assumes office. He has said that he's a person who does not start wars or make wars, but he's a person who ends wars, and he has a challenge here. He can certainly put pressure on Netanyahu in a way that no one else could, because when Biden put pressure on Netanyahu, Netanyahu then went to the Republicans and got support of the Republicans in Congress against Biden. Now, if Trump puts pressure on Netanyahu, Netanyahu has nowhere to go. He can't go to the Democrats because they will support ending the war. So Netanyahu is going to be in a bind if Trump uses the power of the White House and the power of the presidency to force a deal on Netanyahu, and that's certainly what he needs to do.
Do you believe that Netanyahu will ever have to face the music in court and pay for his misdeeds?
Probably not. You know, he's been in court for four years now on indictments for corruption. And those court cases just drag on and on. And now he's supposed to testify in December. And his office is trying to postpone his own giving evidence in his own behalf at the trial because he's too busy guiding the country during this period of warfare. This is quite amusing because back in 2008, 2009, when a different prime minister was indicted for corruption, Mr. Olmert, Netanyahu said that a prime minister who's facing trial doesn't have time to conduct his own trial and also be prime minister. But that, of course, Netanyahu doesn't take on his own.
In that way, he resembles Donald Trump in so many ways. Gershon Baskin, thank you very much for joining us. Gershon Baskin is Middle East Director for the International Communities Organization, a UK-based NGO, and himself a former Israeli hostage negotiator.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.